is the Doomsday Podcast Zoom version. Ed and I can see each other as we're doing this. Ed has been out at his house tonight doing a lot of great work on the draft all the way from noon today doing some live hits. And then it all comes down to the Cowboys' big pick at 17. Ed, did what point, and I think you kind of asked the news conference that Jerry was doing, apparently from his yacht, you wanted to kind of know, when did you think it was maybe headed that way? Let me ask you the same question, Ed. When did it start kind of dawning on you? Because you had some really good information on the Broncos as well, you know, where they picked. But when did you start thinking, uh-oh, one of these big-time wide receivers may be there at 17?
Yeah. So for this draft, I was assigned coverage of four teams, the Cowboys being of primary interest, but I also had the Broncos, the Cardinals, and the Seahawks. And so because it seemed like the Broncos might make a wide receiver their pick at 15, I was interested in Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb in a way that I otherwise might not in my preparation. So I solicited opinions from a lot of scouts, general managers, coaches. I talked to John Elway today about the two players that we're discussing here, the wide receivers, believing he might take one. And of course he did. He took Jerry Jeudy. And so the run of receivers was expected to take place somewhere around 11, where the Jets were picking. And so the Broncos, believing that to be the case last week, were trying to get to Cleveland's pick at 10 to put themselves in position to get Jerry Jeudy. So I think once, like I think Mike McCarthy said tonight when I asked, or maybe it was Jerry, strange that I would get those two confused, but the Cowboys seemed to think that they took notice of the potential availability of one of these prominent receivers once Henry Ruggs of Alabama was the first receiver off the board to the Raiders, which was a surprise. That no receivers went in the top 10, and that Ruggs then went ahead of Jeudy and Lamb, got their attention to the point that they started thinking that maybe they were going to have an opportunity to draft CeeDee Lamb, which, as they said, through all the mock drafts that they did in preparing for this draft, not one time did they have a combination of events take place that in their simulations where CeeDee Lamb was available with the 17th pick in the draft.
All right. And as you're listening to this, a reminder, Ed and I are doing this on Zoom. We love to be in studio together. May not sound quite as great, but it allows us to see each other. And the other thing that Stephen, I believe, shared, and they love doing this, especially when they get a player of great value that slipped down to them. Ed, I believe what I heard Stephen say was that CeeDee Lamb was the sixth player on their board. Of course, he said our board, the number six player. Now, again, we never, on all these mock drafts that we were looking at and everything, we never saw CeeDee Lamb, anybody had him at six. So it's always easy to say these things after the fact. But I do think the Cowboys, I do think they were genuinely surprised, like a lot of people were, that he was available and slipping down. And I thought that was interesting. Ed, there was that comment that they said, McCarthy said, okay, can I recast my vote? Can I change my vote? Because this is an offensive-minded head coach and wants to get, obviously, the quarterback as many weapons, as offense, as many weapons as it can have. And, Ed, I mean, we'll talk about the defense. I mean, they're going to have to make up some ground on the defense. We know that. But from a just plugging a guy in, to Gallup, Amari, and CeeDee Lamb, this becomes, in my mind, Ed, one of the more explosive offenses in the NFL.
I mean, if you look at it, where they were, you're talking about a team that's coming off a season, you know, that for the first time in the 60-year history of the franchise, they have a 4,000-yard passer, 1,000-yard rusher, and not one, but two 1,000-yard receivers. And so did they really need a wide receiver? I mean, they just signed Amari Cooper a few weeks ago to the second richest contract in the entire NFL, a $100 million deal, guarantees him $40 million. Only Julio Jones has a bigger contract. And so you're looking at that, and you're then saying, well, the pass rusher that we were really hoping would be here and thought maybe he wouldn't be, Ke'Lavon Chaisson from the edge rusher from LSU, is suddenly sitting here. And, you know, we lost Robert Quinn, who led our team in sacks and quarterback pressures, lost him in free agency for nothing. And we're in a position where we might be counting on Randy Gregory and Alden Smith, two guys who have no history to suggest they can be depended upon in any way, who didn't play a single snap at all last year, and Alden Smith hasn't played since 2015. Like, you're looking at a situation where you're passing on the second best edge rusher on your board in favor of a receiver, a position where you seem pretty well fortified. Now, I'm going to say, despite all that, they did the right thing. Like, you know, Mike McCarthy said, I thought he put it well. He said, look, you got to give our group credit. We put our board together, and then we had the discipline in the moment to stick to our board. You know, offense, defense, that'll sort itself out in terms of value for pick. But I tend to agree, because I think where this team has historically made its biggest mistakes in the draft is when they've tried to draft for need over the value of the player on the board as the best available player. I mean, an edge rusher is a perfect example. They busted in the first round on Taco Charlton, Shante Carver, Ebenezer Akubon. I mean, that's the position that they have failed on when they have tried to force a pick because of a position need. So did they need CeeDee Lamb? No, I don't think so. Not as much as they needed Chaisson. But if Lamb is that much better a player, then I think they did the right thing. And I think the secondary benefit is, yeah, the Philadelphia Eagles, somebody in your division who has a cornerback who shut down your best receiver when they, you know, they have Darius Slay on their roster. He shut down Amari Cooper when they played the Lions this year. Well, if you don't take CeeDee Lamb, they might take CeeDee Lamb, and then you're playing against the guy twice a year.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Stephen Jones was quoted saying, and I think we've heard it a couple of times from the Cowboys, saying the blinking light was right there. You know, sometimes they had three trade opportunities. They got a little more firm when he started to be there. One thing I did laugh about, though, Ed, you know, there's CeeDee Lamb sitting there, and they're on the clock, and all the ESPN and NFL Network experts. And I just think they're going to be wrong on this. Xavier McKinney, the safety out of Alabama, he's a really good player. But if you look at the Cowboys' history, they just don't take safeties in the first round. Last one was 2002. And so that whole time they were like, Xavier McKinney. And it certainly wasn't the guy. It made me think of something that came up when Jerry, you know, admitted to Don Van Natta about being upset a few years ago when they took Zach Martin instead of Johnny Manziel. Well, this was certainly not the same kind of thing, but this was a guy, you know, not laying up. They had a chance to go for a need, like you said, and they ended up going for who they thought was the better player, the better value. Now, later, Ed, and we might transition to it right now, there's some reporting you did the other day that I found fascinating because it had to do with the quarterback. And you said, hey, that could happen as early as the second, third. I think both you and I think it's probably more likely if they took a quarterback, it would be more like fourth, fifth, sixth round. But how interesting was it tonight when the Packers, the team that sort of has made this a business in the past, okay, let's turn a guy into an asset. But Aaron Rodgers, the great one, sitting right there, and the Packers go out and take a quarterback in the first round. That was one of, if not the biggest stories in the first round.
Well, I can tell you that until that happened, it was very likely that ESPN was going to determine that the Cowboys taking CeeDee Lamb unexpectedly was the biggest story of the first round. But I think what the Packers did certainly surpassed that from the standpoint of Aaron Rodgers coming off hit one of his worst seasons. And, you know, this is kind of something that Favre went through at almost an identical point in his career, both in terms of age and accomplishment in Green Bay, which is one of the big divisive factors in his relationship, Brett Favre's relationship with the Packers, you know, going bad, was he wanted the Packers to be drafting players who were going to help him contend for Super Bowls. And instead, they used their first-round pick on Aaron Rodgers, who was his eventual replacement. And now Rodgers finds himself in the very same position. The Packers, this is the first time since 2005 the Packers have drafted an offensive skill position player, and it's not somebody who's going to help Rodgers. It's somebody who poses a threat to him in terms of ending his tenure with the Green Bay Packers eventually. Now, he's something of a project player, but this is just a really fascinating turn of events. Yeah. In fact, this is just the fourth time in the last 20 years that a team has drafted a quarterback in the first round when they have a former MVP quarterback on their roster. The Packers also did it, obviously, as we just said, when they took Rodgers and they still had Favre. So it's a fascinating thing. Look, Aaron Rodgers is a very sensitive person. I know he's incredibly accomplished, and he's not alone in that. I think people would tell you Tom Brady's the same way. These guys are, even though they've accomplished unprecedented things in the case of Brady and great things in the case of Rodgers, they're very sensitive about their circumstances and the threats that they perceive there to be to their longevity. And it's going to be really interesting to see how Rodgers handles this, especially considering that he doesn't have a long history with the head coach who was involved in this decision. You know, Matt LaFleur just finished his first season as a Packers head coach.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, Rodgers, and we talked about it, we don't know exactly. It seemed like finally he had a really good run with McCarthy, but things had a little soured between them or gotten stale or something. And he's got this new fresh coach, and then the coach, I'm not saying it was the coach's decision, but they go out and, I mean, the coach, this young LaFleur, has a lot on his plate, because all the talk when Packers were on the clock was, Aaron Rodgers, they need to find him some weapons. They got to go wide receiver here. And then they go quarterback. And then they start showing all these shots of this guy looking like Mahomes. Now, he's way more of a developmental quarterback than even Mahomes was. But in this day and age, it's even rare to take a guy like Mahomes in the first round. He got to sit for 1 year and kind of learn behind a quarterback. And he was fortunate that the quarterback really handled it well. You're right. It's very unpredictable what Rodgers knows how Favre handled it. Will Rodgers, you know, but Rodgers is a prickly personality also. Okay, Ed, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. I watched a lot of CeeDee Lamb because I watch a ton of Big 12 football. He is, he's a little bit out of that vein of the Tyreek Hill. If you're trying to get that smaller wide receiver, but he's got unbelievable athleticism. He could get up and get his hands on any ball. So it's that kind of thing. When you were talking to folks, I don't want to give your sources away. I'll let you say them if you want to. But you were talking earlier off screen about how difficult it was to sort of judge some of these wide receivers in this draft. What did, when you were learning about that, what did you hear like about the Alabama receiver, Judy, and then CeeDee Lamb? What were the things that stood out?
Yeah, well, I talked to John Elway, you know, former Hall of Fame, Super Bowl winning quarterback, who made the decision tonight, two picks ahead of the Cowboys, to take Jerry Judy, the Alabama receiver. Earlier today, when I was talking to Elway, you know, he mentioned that he was a little concerned about a couple different things in the evaluation process. And the first part of it was the high bust rate among first-round wide receivers in the NFL was a factor in their putting their board together. And then he said, of the two players, you know, we're talking about Judy and Lamb, he said, the hardest thing is you watch OU on tape, and they've got everybody spread out, so Lamb is never covered.
And he said, and then you watch Judy at Alabama, and they have so many other threats that these guys are always wide ass open. And so it's really hard to judge them as players because they're not covered like they're going to be covered in the NFL. They don't have to fight off press coverage, you know. People aren't allowed to – there just isn't the quality of defensive player across the board in college football on a weekly basis that you see in the NFL. And now, obviously, you're going to play with better throwers too. But the thing that was interesting to me, and I probably talked to, you know, half a dozen defensive coordinators, personnel people, general managers about those two players, and it was a little surprising to me. Now, Elway obviously graded Judy as a higher than he did Lamb because he took him with Lamb still on the board. But everybody else I talked to seemed to have Lamb slightly ahead of Judy, and a lot of it was they acknowledged that Judy was a more polished route runner, could create separation, but that Lamb played with length and ball skills and athleticism, had a great ability to get open. And there was this, I think, you know, somebody told me that Lamb is just more of a football player than Judy is. Judy's a receiver. Lamb is a football player. You know, he's a punt returner. He can be a physical player, obviously a great run after catch type player. And so all of those things considered, the sense I got from this group of people I talked to was, hey, Jerry Judy, you know, is a better route runner, and he might right now be a slightly better player than Lamb, but I kind of fear he is what he is, and he doesn't have the ceiling that Lamb does to continue to improve and get better. And over time, Lamb will prove to be the superior receiver in the majority opinion that I solicited.
Well, that's interesting. That makes sense. Lamb is someone who kind of freelances out there. I'll also say, you know, and maybe this has something to do with Alabama wide receivers. When you were just describing Judy, I started thinking about Amari. Amari is one of the smoothest route runners in the league. I don't know what was going on last year, whether it was an injury or whatever. There was some really weird stuff, but he's gotten a huge contract. This should be a good complimentary thing because the way you were just describing Judy is kind of Amari. If everything's right and he can go out there and his body's right and he can run his routes, he can be very, very, he could be a great wide receiver. This guy, Ed, CeeDee Lamb, I saw it against Baylor in the Big 12 title game. It's like if there's one missed tackle or if somebody runs past him, he's just gone. Like he is like kind of a otherworldly. In fact, you remember the wide receiver that went the first round to the Ravens or wherever, Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown from Oklahoma. He was a great college receiver. I don't think he's CD's a different level, and so CeeDee Lamb only got to 17 because there were just so many of these guys, and then some other stuff happened that pushed him down a little bit. Some other sort of surprising things. And people that run on offensive tackles, everybody's like, oh, gosh, we got to have one of these. How about that Becton's dad? Did you get a look at that Mekhi Becton's dad out there in Plano? I was thinking maybe somebody should draft him. Hey, Ed, what did you think of CeeDee Lamb? You were on that conference call. With CeeDee Lamb, how did he strike you? Was he elated as you would think? Was he reserved? What was his personality like? And what did he have to say that was interesting?
Yeah, I think he's excited about the opportunity to play for the Cowboys. I think he is well aware of the offensive potential that he's joining and thinks he'll make an immediate impact. I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, based on the projections, I think most teams believe there's not going to be a preseason of any significant kind leading up to a season they hope to play on time. And so, you know, he's going to have to learn fast, and he's joining an offense where it's kind of already in transition anyway. And there's going to be a limited number of opportunities for him to get on the field with the people he's going to be playing with.
And we've already seen that historically receivers don't necessarily make a huge impact the first year. And you were talking a minute ago about Amari Cooper. And I think some people would look at this and say, what does this mean for Michael Gallup going forward? I think this is a bigger threat to Amari Cooper in my mind, because if you look at the contract that he signed with the Cowboys after sampling free agency for part of a day, while it's a 5-year, $100 million contract, the Cowboys can really get out of it after 2 years and $40 million and save themselves the rest should they choose to do so. So I think, you know, Amari Cooper is going to have to be a more consistent player, and he's going to have to perform better in big games against top corners, which he didn't do last year. If that doesn't get rectified over the next 2 years, then there's a chance the Cowboys walk away from Amari Cooper 2 years from now.
All right. Yeah. Good. Ed, that the comparisons, Amari, Judy, all those things, fascinating, and appreciate you, boy, all your research has come to pass. And I do want to say this, Ed, this draft, they'll get going tomorrow. It does put a little pressure on the Cowboys when you think about day two. We thought this was definitely going to be a defensive draft. Now, I mean, and it's not always. We saw last year, Tristan Hill didn't get anything done for the Cowboys. So there's no guarantee. You just go find a guy in the second round and plug him in. He's going to be your pass rusher. He's going to be your starting cornerback. But they really do need to find a starter on defense.
Well, I mean, it's not just at edge rusher. It's also in the secondary. I mean, they got all of their prominent players in the secondary are out of contract after this upcoming season. And you're talking about trying to get better on defense when you've lost your sack leader in Robert Quinn. You lost your best cover corner in Byron Jones. You know, they made some nice additions, I think, with some veteran players on the defensive line. But who's going to rush the passer from the other side? Alden Smith, DeMarcus Lawrence will be an effective player, you know, wherever he is. But Randy Gregory and Alden Smith and Tyrone Crawford, I'm not sure that's good enough to get it done unless, you know, Alden Smith goes back to being the player he was in 2013. But there's no indication you should have any such expectations. And I think the secondary is a huge issue as well. But I think what we're looking at right now is a team that's going to have to outscore their opponents. They probably should expect defensively to be in the same predicament they were all of last year. You know, they're one of the worst teams in football. In the Dak Zeke era, they rank 27th in the NFL in creating turnovers, and they rank 31st in turnovers, I'm sorry, and 27th in pass rush percentage. So I wouldn't expect either one of those things to get significantly better given the move that they made tonight, even though I think they did the right thing ultimately. And
all right, yeah, I think that's a good point that you feel like, hey, they stuck with their board, they actually did it, but it is going to be interesting to see how they do this on defense. And the truth is, we saw last year they put up some great offensive numbers, but we also know it was kind of fool's gold, some of those numbers, because whether it be the Patriots, Jets game, New Bears. Orleans comes to mind, Bears. I mean, you know, a lot of those numbers came in certain few games, and the offense was not as consistent as it needed to be. I do have to think that Dak Prescott, you talk about, you know, they brought in, they did the extension with the tight end, and then they got these three great wide receivers. So it'll be and Ed, I hate to bring it up because it's just such a sad thing, but I do think we should note that Dak Prescott, Cowboys had a statement on it, lost one of his older brothers, has two older brothers, and Jace, one of his older brothers passed away. And again, we don't have a lot of details on it. We do know, though, the Cowboys confirmed it with a statement. And of course, they've asked for privacy, but just a profoundly sad story coming out during the draft tonight. I was on, you know, Twitter and doing some things and said something, and somebody tweeted me and said, hey, did you hear about this? And I started kind of looking around, and there were various tweets. And then, of course, with the Cowboys statement, we knew it had really happened. So a really sad night for the Prescott family.
Yeah, you know, I did that big feature on Dak last season about all his tattoos, and he was really gracious with his time and and talked about, you know, all the various ones and what the inspiration was for all of them. And the first two he got were the initials of his brothers, one on each arm. They all three did that for each other. Each brother had the other two initials tattooed on the back of their arms. And so, and we all know Dak did as he rose to prominence and had some opportunities commercially, he involved his brothers in the soup commercials that he did for Campbell's. So, tough time for Dak Prescott for sure.
All right, Ed, and I hate to end on such a sad note, so we'll end on a lighter note. Did you happen to notice that I caused a little stir on Twitter today?
Your snark got you.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like I got in trouble, although, you know, some of our local scolding people, I think the Brad Shams of the world are mad at me.
You only didn't get in trouble because you don't really represent an organization. Like, you don't have a boss. If you did, I think you might reprimand it.
I do have a boss. I have a radio
funny
show.
Myself, but I know your humor. And obviously, that's a dangerous thing to play with on Twitter, where everybody takes everything seriously and everybody is looking for a reason to bring somebody down.
Well, I like those Onion headlines. And so sometimes I do my own. And so basically I said, Jerry Jones has asked a scouting department not to disturb him during tonight's draft. And I thought it was so preposterous that people would understand. That's just my style of humor. But it started taking on a life of its own. And then Ed, Bleacher Report ran a report in SB Nation. Somebody said some ESPN stations across the country are running with it. So I tried to put it back and tried to kind of, but anyway, I couldn't
really. I think this really explains why I'm a part of this. Somebody has to bring credibility because yours has been lower than it is right now.
I still feel good about the tweet. It took on a life of its own. All right, Ed, good stuff. We'll get back together again soon. Thanks to everybody. The Zoom sounds a little different, but Ed, I kind of like it because even during a time when we can't be together in person, it allows us to see each other. I mean, I was frustrated a little bit tonight because, well, okay, I would love for you to have been more a part of it, much like I'm sure some of your other associates would have liked to have gotten more screen time during the draft. I will say this, though. Our buddy Daniel Jeremiah, who I like a lot, he did not – I think hopefully he'll shine on day two and day three because they weren't always going to him, you know. And he had the most presidential look. I don't know if you noticed that he had kind of a senator look about him. In a really beautiful backdrop.
Is that a compliment these days? The most presidential look, is that a compliment?
I don't want to get in trouble. That's
true.
I'm not
allowed to comment on politics.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I meant presidential kind of as, not specific.
In a traditional sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
In a traditional sense. I think we should go.
Are you feeling safe and everything, by the way? Are you in good health? You look in good health. Is everything good with you?
As far as I know, I am.
Good.
I think there was one personal note I would like to mention. You want to end on a happy note. We don't want to end the Dak news. I can tell you that little Henry is a big brother.
Oh, my goodness.
Our son and daughter-in-law in Colorado had a baby last night, a little girl, Delilah.
Whoa.
Makes me think of the song, Plain White Tees. Hey there, Delilah. And it was a remarkable moment when little Henry, who's, you know, lived 4.5 years as an only child and taken full advantage of that, they brought the baby home and, you know, all swaddled in blankets and handed her to little Henry to determine his reaction. And little Henry started singing to her, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. So it was quite
amazing. Oh, that is so sweet. I wish you could, like, hold up. I mean, it's a podcast, so they can't see it, but I would love to see a picture. Why don't you if you could text me a picture, I would love. And wait, did Delilah, what's the full name? Or can you give that? What's the middle name, at least?
The middle name is Elodia. It's her Sarah's grandmother's name. It's a different name.
Delilah Elodia. I think it's pretty. I think it's very pretty.
Henry's name is Henry Edward Werder, I thought it should be Delilah Edward Werder, but I couldn't quite sell the group on it.
Or do all my cousins in East Texas used to be named after their dads, and it would be Jerry Ann because the dad was Jerry. So yeah, they could have done something like that. Well, congratulations. I'm very happy for you. That is really exciting news.
So we're looking to get to Colorado as soon as possible so we can see her for the first time.
I would not wait for day three. Jerry just starts losing. He loses all focus on day three. If I were you, I'd fly out Saturday night. All right, Ed, thank you. Good information as always. The Doomsday Podcast, together again via Zoom. You can have this on all our different platforms. I just want to say good night, everyone. Say good night, Ed.
Good night, Ed. Have been hung. You're praying for